Recorded live in New York City, in Greenwich Village, at the legendary Bottom Line Cabaret, which is now closed. Indigo Girls, we were talking about that performance with Joan Baez. And Indigo Girls in the studio with us this July 4th weekend as we celebrate independent thinkers, including you guys. I saw you guys, by the way. I meant to tell you this, but I saw you, I think, when things were really just sort of starting to take off. It was when I first became aware of you, and I'm guessing it was around 89 mm-hmm. here in New York, because a friend of mine worked at the Letterman show. And it was closer to fine that I was sitting there on the back when he was still on NBC.
I remember that.
The same network anymore.
Yeah, that was very exciting.
Yeah.
So exciting.
It was. The audience was really digging it, too.
We got a good plug from him that night because he kept saying, is it the Indigo Girls or Indigo Girls? I'll never forget that. It was like, and he said our name, and it was like, wow, David Letterman is saying our name.
Right.
Yeah, those were heady days.
Yeah. Were you early on part of, before things did sort of take off and label deals and all of that stuff, part of any regular open mic kind of things?
Well, we played at this place called Little Five Points Pub in Atlanta. We were sort of the bar band.
Uh-huh.
We played there a lot.
Yeah.
And we used to have all kinds of people come up on stage with us. In that sense, it was open mic just because people would come and sing their own songs. It was a real mishmash of people from different genres and
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
some friends and some people we didn't even know well. And so it was just like a stage for a hootenanny, you know. And
right.
We got introduced to a lot of great community musicians in that venue and have very fond memories of that.
Yeah.
And we'd drive to Nashville sometimes and play this open mic at the Bluebird Cafe.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That was a long drive for two songs, but worth it.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, we toured. We were an indie band, so we played up at the Knitting Factory and mm-hmm. CB's and
anywhere we could.
Did little showcases where we play like four songs in a lineup of like, you know, five or six bands, you know,
right.
things like that. So we did it a lot.
Yeah, CB's is another room that's threatened now.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy, these small sort of independent places that are more significant than almost any other kind of room, you know, and you had to battle to keep them open now.
It's like a microcosm for what's going on in the world, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Absolutely. It really is, because it will maybe be replaced by, you know, some sort of corporate chain thing,
mm-hmm.
Starbucks, Duane Reade, drugstore, something. It's like not replaceable, these rooms, for what they really are.
Yeah.
I was asking you about the open mic thing, too, because a couple of days ago, John Prine was here, and I asked him about that same kind of time period, and he said, yeah, that he was playing. But before he was playing open mics, he was hanging at them. And he was at one night where some people were up, and he just said something like, they're not very good, or whatever he had to say about them. And somebody else there said, yeah, well, if you know so much, then you get on stage and do it. And John said he got up and he did three songs. And before he was even off the stage, the guy that owned the club said that he wanted to book him to like a regular weekly gig. So, you know,
cool.
One of those great moments where his wisecrack paid off.
Yeah.
Indigo Girls in the studio with us here at Sirius, and this new release that is just out this week called Rarities, with some interesting covers, as we talked about the Clash song. Just musical favorites and things like that of yours. I wondered if when you have moved, and you know when you move, and for me the record collection and the CD collection is one of the hardest parts of that. So sometimes I try to cull it out a little bit when moving, just to have a few less boxes, and it's a miserable thing that you never can really do. But are there some absolutes that both of you could name that it would have to always stay in your collection at a time like that? Or is there some records you could talk about that are the ones that you have repurchased more than any others? For wearing them out or buying them for friends or for whatever reason, certain things we buy more than once.
I think I've bought Public Enemies, It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back, about 10 times. I own the whole Joni Mitchell catalog. She was really instrumental to me early on. I couldn't live without Heart's music, you know, or classic rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the first things. I like a lot of world music, too, some French artists, Brazilian and mm-hmm. African.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the first things that come to mind.
Yeah. You want to add to that?
I bought that same Public Enemy record a few times, too. I kept giving it to my neighbors where I live in this like rural area. That they're really into hip-hop. Some of my neighbors out in the country, and they don't know who Public Enemy is, so I'm always like, you need to hear this.
Yeah.
You know,
it reminds me, even as you bring them up, of the Tom Morello mix that's on the Rarities album, mm-hmm. just the punch and the energy that's going on with that one.
It's a
and
cool mix.
Definitely a surprise amongst everything else that's on there.
Yeah, we're big Rage Against the Machine fans, so, mm-hmm. you know, for obvious reasons politically, but musically,
yeah,
amazing band.
Yeah.
It was just an idea, And we were honored that Tom was willing to do it.
Yeah.
Honestly.
It kicks right in. It, you know, like 3 seconds in and you're like...
Yeah.